Hi, John Solberg here, the host of the best moments of the Barbecue Central show in 10 minutes or less. And you're listening to the Baseball and Barbecue Podcast.
The studios of Baseball and BBQ on Long Island, New York. This is episode number 209 of Baseball and BBQ. I'm Jeff the Oku Cohen, along with Leonard Hollywood Aberman. We welcome you back to our show, Leonard.
Hello. What a difference a week makes.
Yes.
Jeff. We'll get to that in a second because, like I said, you don't listen to the show for current events, but the baseball season has changed a lot. And Actually, we're going to get to that. But let's just tell everybody who our guests are, because this is a very special episode 209. We have Rennie LaRue. Jeff, who is Rennie LaRue?
He's the executive director of the New York State Baseball Hall of Fame. But also, he does New York State Basketball Hall of Fame. And New York State Hockey Hall of Fame.
Yes, he does. But the only one of those that has an actual physical building is the baseball one. But I have a feeling, who knows, those others might be, you know, we don't know what the future brings for those. But there's actually the New York State Baseball Hall of Fame. He not only is the executive director, but he spearheaded the whole thing where now there's a physical building. And we'll talk all about that in the interview. We have James Hare. And James Hare is from Cucamonga. I love saying that.
Who doesn't?
Cattle Company. We will talk all about his wonderful products. But first, let me just let everybody know that the last of the major pro sports league kicks off this week. And BetOnline is your top spot for all your NBA action this season. With Major League Baseball postseason, NFL and college football, and the NHL in full swing, BetOnline is your number one source for wagering, news, odds, trends, and predictions. Get everything NBA at your fingertips with both desktop and mobile access for every sport anytime. Head to the BetOnline today to get in on the action. Don't forget to use promo code BLEAV. That's BLEAV to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online. It is where the game starts. So, Jeff, I was saying, when we did this recording last week around the same time, you had two teams that were up 2-0, the Astros and the Phillies.
The Rangers were up 2-0.
I'm sorry. The Rangers. Yes. Okay. And now the Rangers, well, when this is released, we're recording this on a Tuesday night. We're releasing it on Saturday. So there is a few days in between. But we do know that the Rangers are going to the World Series.
Yes.
And after tonight, we will know whether the Phillies or the Diamondbacks are going. So when this is released on Saturday, everybody's going to know.
Game one would have already been played because I think it starts on Friday night.
So now you could make a prediction of who's going to win that game. You might not even have the right teams when you make this prediction. So let's skip that. Are you happy with how baseball is going? How about that?
Well, you know, I've been very critical of baseball, you know, the playoffs, but it is what it is. You know, you might have the Arizona Diamondbacks who won 84, 85 games this year. They might be going to the World Series and that's what baseball wanted. That I don't know if that's what they wanted. And a lot of people are complaining about it. But you know what? You put more playoff teams in, it's bound to happen. They have more playoff rounds, which means more revenue, which means more money for the owners and, mm-hmm. and the players. You're not going back. So, you know, stop your complaining. It's here to stay. And I think there'll be more playoff teams once they add in two more teams to the league.
Yeah, maybe there will be. But, Jeff, it's the NHL, the NBA. Aren't they the same way? If a team is hot at that time, they're going to advance, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So that is what, you know, baseball has become like the other sports. The hot team is the team that's going to move forward.
And now there's different playoff formats that's being thrown out there. But you know what? They're not going to give less games. They're not going back to a one-game playoff and then the next round and whatever. That's not happening.
No.
You know, it's all about the shekels.
Right, yeah. You know what? As they say, the horse is out of the barn. You can't put it back in. The toothpaste is out of the tube. It's not.
Well, I think the horse can go back in the barn.
But the toothpaste can't go back in the tube. The
toothpaste is a little difficult, yes.
I mean, that, you know, and I'm enjoying it. Okay, maybe it's because I don't have skin in the game. I certainly understand that a team like, you know, the Atlanta Braves that, you know, wins 100 plus games and they get bounced, Braves fans are not happy.
Dodgers, Orioles, gone. Right.
But that's that is what it is. And
we know that the Rangers did not win their division. They're in the World Series. And we know the winner of tonight's game, Phillies and Diamondbacks, they did not win the divisions.
Right. But I still find it exciting.
Yeah.
To me. I mean, again, doesn't matter to me who wins it. So if it was my team, maybe I'd feel differently. But
we know you're rooting for the Phillies. I'm rooting for the Diamondbacks.
That is true. So far. So, and I got Texas went in. I'm sorry that if, you know, the Dusty Baker, probably by the time this comes out, we might know if he's coming back. But the rumor is that he's going to retire. You know, of course, you would have liked to see Dusty Baker retire with another championship. I think Dusty Baker, though, is a Hall of Fame. He's a Hall of Famer.
He's going in.
So is
Bruce Bochy.
Right. Anyway, Jeff, we have Rennie LaRue. You know that the format of this show sometimes changes a little bit. We usually do an intro for our guests, but Rennie came on and he was excited. And that's great. When you hear this interview, it isn't because you're catching it mid-interview. He just started. We didn't.
Exactly.
So his intro is he's the executive of the
director.
Of the New York State Baseball Hall of Fame. And that's it. So let's go, Rennie.
Including Daryl Strawberry over the summer. And I've got to tell you, I really like Daryl a lot.
Yeah. Well,
he's had a long road. But interestingly, both he and Curtis Granderson both played for the Yankees and Mets.
Yeah, we remember that. Oh, and Todd Zeal,
yes. So it's a nice class. I'm really excited about Roger Maris's son, Kevin, coming and his family. And Elston's, Howard's daughter, Cheryl, is coming.
Nice.
And I think she's going to sing the anthem. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
You got it.
But it's a good class. You know, I'm really big on scouts in the last couple of years. We did Billy Blitzer. You know, from Long Island, we did Johnny Morris, who's a lead scout with the Cincinnati Reds. And they both nominated Joe Rigoli and Sal Agostinelli, Cards and Phillies lead scouts. So
nice.
Real good guys, a lot of years in the game, very happy with them. You know, we've got another guy being inducted. You probably have never heard of this guy's name before.
Here we go. I know who he's going to say.
Jake Fishman.
Oh, it's not who I thought he was going to say.
Who is Jake Fishman?
So Jake Fishman went to Union College up here in Schenectady, New York. He's a 6'5", left-handed Dan Quisenberry.
Oh.
And he was the ERA leader in college in the nation in his senior year. He was a dominant center fielder when they brought him to Union, and he hides the ball so well, nobody could hit him. He got to the majors last year with the Florida Marlins, and he did well. Numbers were good. He then was a free agent. He pitched for Team Israel in the World Baseball Classic. He did well there. He signed a free agent contract with the Oakland A's. Not a great move, only because the A's are dysfunctional.
Right.
So he tweaked his elbow a little bit. He's on the DL until July, and they released him because they signed him to a big deal in the offseason. He ended up pitching for the Long Island Ducks, and I have a feeling we'll see him in the major leagues next year. But a wonderful guy. To get to the major leagues from Union College is nothing short of a miracle. So you're
going to
like him when you meet him. Jake's a really good guy.
You know, Rennie, how many people, and we know that he's great in his own right and what he does, but how many people think that the baseball player Rick Cerrone is going to be inducted?
Oh, boy. Funny you mention that, because Rick Cerrone from Baseball Digest, who used to be with the Yankees, hates to be linked with him. One day he was a little frustrated, and he goes, 40 years I've been going through this. He's Rick with two R's. Rick the player is one R. And they're friends. They're friends. They get along well. But Rick's like constantly being confused with him.
Right.
And he came to the hall a couple weeks ago just to see in advance. He has some relatives in Albany, so he drove up from Jersey. And he's done a great job with Baseball Digest. Really nice job. And they're still surviving, you know, in this environment where Sports Illustrated, are they still in print at all?
Oh, I haven't seen that, but Baseball Digest is still in print. I think it comes out like six times a year.
Yeah, and they're doing well. They I really like their layout. The writers are good. They contribute articles. And so, Rick, you know, I worry about perception and what people are going to think of the hall. He loved it. He was really surprised. I love Cooperstown. I've been there a gazillion times, and you know, my hall is never going to be Cooper's. We're not even in the same league, not even close. But you know, we gutted this building and restored it, and it's getting better every day. So we're getting closer. We opened in July, and now we're only open on Saturdays. We'll close for the winter soon. More renovations to take place, but our theater is great. Staten Island Ferry Hawks, Gary Perrone gave me 50 stadium seats for our theater.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And Gary got inducted last year.
Right. We remember.
And rumor has it that those seats, I think the Ferry Hawks are owned by the Yankees, Randy Levine, I think. I think they got a lot of those seats when they tore the stadium down. So there's a feeling that those 50 seats we chucked up the thruway are Yankee Stadium seats.
Oh.
Same color blue. So I really like this class a lot. Ron Jamaris' son, you guys are a little younger than me, so you don't really remember him, but he told me, like, after he hit the 61 home runs in 61, he had a very severe hand injury, never went on the DL, played through it, but it essentially robbed him of his power.
Mm-hmm.
So they traded him to the Cardinals in 67, where he batted .385, won the World Series. And it was a big part of that Cardinals World Series team. He was a devastatingly good outfielder with a great arm. Didn't run on him, didn't run on Jay Buhner, didn't run on Ichiro, Clemente, all the same defensive aptitude. But Roger, I asked Kevin Maris, tell me, 61. He goes, yeah, pretty accurate, pretty true to life. And I think Billy Crystal is sending us a video as a compliment to Roger's induction.
Nice.
And Bob Costas called him for me and said, hey, let's go to this. And Billy goes, I'm in L.A. that week, and I can't get there.
Oh, but wow.
He and Kevin are very close.
That would have been. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking for a minute. We're inducting another guy who can't come, but he's sending people. His name is Bob Aspromonte.
Right. Okay.
Grew up in Brooklyn. Brother Ken played for the Angels. His first at bat was 1957 with the Brooklyn Dodgers. I think he was 19. So they moved to LA. He plays for the Dodgers in 59 and 60. And he got selected in the expansion draft by the Houston Colt 45s, where he became their first All-Star. And he was their Derek Jeter in Houston. And while he was there, first All-Star, he used to go to this one certain politician's rallies and speeches. And as this gentleman won his first election, if it was announced that Bob was going to be there, they would get, like Jeter, thousands of fans. So that he forged a special friendship with this politician. And the next election, he moved up. He won again, Aspro, big part. And then again, he moves up again. He wins again. Aspro's right there with him, lending all support. Finally, he runs for one more office and wins. Do you know who it was?
Who's that?
George Bush. So George Bush is his biggest fan.
Wow.
So we're hoping we may get a video from President Bush.
Oh, there you go.
Loves Aspro, loves him. Like Aspro, I think, is 89 or 90 now, but he's sharp as a tack, handsome guy. He has some health issues. So he may get on the plane. He may not. We'll see what his wife and doctor say. But he's been waiting for this for a year. He's so excited. But I have two guys from Tennessee that are really close with him, and they're flying up. And if he doesn't speak, they'll give a speech for him. But nice. The story about I actually verified that with the Houston Astros. They said, yes, President Bush, big Aspro Monty fan. And they gave me a nice tribute for Aspro, too. So that's a great story. You know,
absolutely. Could I ask you, who is Mike Lederman? I'd never heard of him.
Okay, Mike Lederman, boy, he was a really good-looking guy. He died of Lou Gehrig's disease maybe 6 years ago. Really handsome guy. He was a multimillionaire furniture czar in New York City, in Long Island. But he was very involved with youth baseball. Victor Feld is on my board, and he's an inductee. He's 85, I think. And Victor is the head of the GNYSAA, Greater New York Sandlot Athletic Association. Thousands of kids, all ages, you know, really, they don't have a way to really make money. So when they were short, Victor would go to Mike Lederman and say, gee, Mike, I'm sorry to be here. But, and Mike would say, how much do you need, Victor? And he'd say, well, I need $5,000. He'd just take out the check and gave it to him. No repayment. No, didn't have to sign anything. Just here, take it. Did that several times. Just out of the goodness of his heart to help kids. Mm-hmm. So when Victor nominated him, if you read his obituary online, it's really moving. You know, his wife and kids are coming, and you know, it's hard to die from ALS, but
sure.
What a mark this guy made for youth baseball. I'm very sensitive to that. You know, we really don't induct a lot of dead people because they're not going to come. But in Mike Lederman's case, I had to do that. To recognize the, you know, his contributions to the game of baseball. That was good. Yeah. You know, I like this year we'll be sold out again, you know, for our
that's what I wanted to ask you that, Rennie. I wanted to ask you, I know last year you had 492 people and just the inductees alone this year, probably is one of your biggest classes, right?
Yeah, we run similarly to this size. Not everybody comes every year like Aspro, but, you know, the other guy I'm really happy about is Chris Chambliss. Now, you know, I'm a baseball fan, but I have a soft spot for those Munson, Pinella, Chambliss, Bucky Dent, Randolph teams. I mean, I love those teams.
Of course.
I'm revisiting Chambliss's life, and I'm searching for him on the internet. And I pull up the home run against Kansas City because there's a picture after he hits it of Munson behind him jumping up in the air with glee. It's a tremendous picture. But then I watch his home run trot. There were hundreds of fans on the field. When he rounds second base, they're tackling the guy. He actually hit the ground. They grabbed his hat. He was blocking like a fullback trying to score. Do you remember seeing that home run?
Oh, yeah. Track? Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I had no idea it was that crazy.
Yeah, it was nuts, that's for sure. I remember it was off Mark Littell in right center field. It just cleared the wall, and they went nuts.
Yeah. Dom Scala was here this weekend. We had our first youth baseball clinic across from my Hall of Fame. And I asked him about that. And Dom was like, those days were crazy. Dom was the unofficial protector of Billy. So when he was the bullpen coach, and George personally hired him. So he said, listen, Billy goes out, you go with him. So he told me a couple of times he had to step in because guys were gunning for Billy all the time, trying to provoke a fight. So he said one night they were in Anaheim, they were at this restaurant near the field, bunch of the coaches, Yogi, Billy, him, this one guy kept sort of provoking, and Dom walked over and said, hey, listen, you know, now isn't the time. Really, you're never supposed to approach anybody where they're eating at a restaurant. Like, you can't ask their autograph while they're eating their, you know, cheesecake. It's just, you can't do it.
Right.
So this guy then gets up and proceeds to approach him anyway, whereupon Dom took him out with a right to the chin, knocked him cold. But they got it in the papers. They identified Dom as the culprit. And his wife called him. What are you doing out there? You know, your name's all over the papers. So he goes, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. So they fly back to New York. George calls him in. He goes, what happened? He goes, well, I'll tell you, you told me to protect Billy. I was protecting Billy. This guy was gunning for him. And he goes, good job. Good job. Get out of here. So Dom Scala is going to introduce Alston Howard. Ray Negron is going to introduce Chris Chambliss and Strawberry. Nancy Newman's our MC again. She's doing quite a few people. The hotel this year said, hey, you got to cut back the seats a little bit. We're getting a little tight in that room. So I think we're topped out of 440 or 450 this year.
Oh, really?
We don't have time to set the trays up in there, you know. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. 450 is good. Oh. Fine with that.
We have been, Jeff and I are counting the days. That is like one of the highlights of the year.
You know, it's really a fun event because you can approach those guys. You can do a show there. They'll spend time with you.
Yeah.
They're all really polite, you know, a little bit more polite than most. Daryl is really, he came here to Clifton Park where I live because I was having a little difficulty in arriving at the decision to induct him. And I must have interviewed 100 people. What do you think? How do you feel? And they were all pretty much for it. But so I said, listen, I need to look in his eyes. I need to sit 3 feet across from him. I need him to tell me he wants to be in the Hall of Fame, that it means something to him. So a mutual friend says, come to my office down the street from me Friday at noon. Daryl will be there. So he drives up from New Jersey. I meet with him. The guy leaves, just me and him. And I said, listen, you know, I'd like to consider you for the Hall of Fame, but I need to hear it from you that it matters to you, that you want to be in this Hall of Fame. And he goes, more than you can imagine. He goes, very important to me. And he's looking me straight in the eye. The guy that nominated him was Ray Negron, 50 years with the Yankees, right? Mm-hmm. They're community guy. I said, call him on the phone. So we get on a conference call. I said, Ray, I'm here with Daryl. I said, I want you to be the first to congratulate him. He's being inducted on November 11th. And we all had a tear. We all had an emotional moment. And it was just, now that I've gotten to know him, I feel bad that I was a little cautious with us. Because I'm not cautious. I don't have a tough time making a decision on anybody. Like, if you call me, I can pretty much say, yeah, he'll go on the list. He's a possibility or not really. Never. He's the only guy I've ever had that kind of uncertainty about. And now I might have erred on the side of caution, but I'm really glad he's getting in. It's good for him.
Yeah.
And literally like 3 weeks after that, the Mets decided to retire his number. I've got an invite out to Steve Cohen to come. He loves Daryl. You never know who's going to show up at one of my dinners. That's all I can tell you.
That's Jeff. We got to be on the ready.
Yes.
That's great.
You know, Randy, last year we met at the dinner, we met Yogi Berra's son, Larry.
Yes.
And what a wonderful gentleman. And we met him at the Yogi Berra Museum. He gave us a tour. It was just, you never know the relationship. Like you said, you never know the relationship you're going to make. And he was just fantastic.
So last year, I was so busy. The room was packed. And I sort of met him in passing. His date introduced me. And she goes, "It's Larry Berra." And I said, "Hi, Larry." And I think I kept on going. And I screwed that up. So early in the season at Yankee Stadium, one of my guys, Joe Whiting, you know, is a New York City guy. And he calls me on a cell phone. And he goes, "Listen, have you inducted Yogi yet?" And I said, "No." Well, he's with Larry at the stadium. And so Larry was there also, or Joe was with him last year because they came for Bucky. So Larry goes to Joe, "You know Rennie, right?" He goes, "Oh, yeah, really well." He goes, "Is there any reason why my dad's not in the Hall of Fame?" So, So he goes, "I'll be right back." He calls me on a cell phone and he goes, "Hey, Yogi's not in, right?" I'm like, "Yeah, nobody's nominated him yet. You know, I can't arbitrarily just induct people." He goes, "I hereby nominated." I said, "I'd seconded." So he goes back to see Larry and he goes, "Larry, we'd like to induct Yogi this year." But Larry plays softball in an over 70 league and they go all over Minnesota, North Dakota, Wisconsin, Ohio. So that weekend they have a tournament. They only have 11 guys in their team. What position do you think Larry plays?
He's got to be catcher.
He's a catcher.
Of course.
And I call him. He goes, "Rennie," he goes, "we very much accept, you know, my daughter Lindsay, who did the documentary about him, which was fabulous."
Yeah,
yes, it was. "We'll be there next year." So he's going to be in next year.
2024. Nice. Jeff, reserve your seats now.
We got to get our reservations in now. I know.
Rennie, we're in.
And I think Larry and Lindsay will both talk.
Yeah.
Nice. And they gave me a copy of that documentary to play in my hall. It was in theaters for a while. I'm not sure whether it is now.
Yeah.
But it was a great. Have you seen the documentary?
Yes.
Fabulous.
Yeah. It was absolutely fantastic. Yeah.
No, it was terrific. Yes. Yeah. And of course, Larry, like we said before, was a guest on this show. So,
so was Lindsay.
And Lindsay as well.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
They're wonderful people. Wonderful.
Yes. They really are.
Renee, I wanted to ask you, last year we read a book by Dr. Paul Semendinger on Roy White. And I remember asking you if Roy White was in the New York State Baseball Hall of Fame, and you said he wasn't, and because he turned it down.
His wife just passed like 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago. And she had a kidney disease where she used to have to go to Pittsburgh with Roy for treatment. That was the place that could handle her. She was sick for several years. So Roy didn't really want to go far from home.
Right.
So
that makes sense.
We've talked. I told him, you have an open invitation for induction. Anytime you want, you know, you're invited. We'll induct you. Okay. So I'm assuming he'll be next year, too.
Okay, great. Yeah, because he's well deserved it. I mean, he was a fabulous Yankee. Yeah.
Really good guy.
So, Rennie, let's talk about this very new brick-and-mortar location at 45 Harrison Street in Gloversville, New York. It is the New York State Baseball Hall of Fame. Just one of the things I read about it is there's a $2.5 million baseball collection. So, Rennie, tell us about this. You actually made a dream come true.
Well, you know, I did, and it's, you know, a long time in coming. Fulton County, where this building is, had the building, and they more or less gave me the building. They didn't give me title to it, but they said, 10 years for a dollar, knock yourself out. And I said, well, yeah, you know, let's agree. I said, but I'm not running stuff by you. I'm not giving you carpet samples. You have to give me complete free reign. They said, you got it. So when I opened the front door, I was like, I'm out of my mind. You know, this is 45 minutes from Cooperstown, an hour from my house. It's a nice drive, though, upstate New York, scenic. But I had, when I first took possession, it was like a year ago. Myself and Mr. Sledgehammer and some other people came, and we were knocking walls out and knocking islands out. And it was months just to gut the building out. The theater was a garage. It was an auto parts store, industrial auto parts. And the garage doors were huge, like 12 feet high. So I'm like, here's my theater. So we had to, that was my special project. And I knew that theater would really make the hall give it dimension. So we have those 50 seats Gary Perone gave us. But across the street, these two crazy guys that I loved to death, Dave Karpinski and Mike Hauser, they put $1.8 million into this old Parkhurst field, this ancient field that the grandstand had gotten torn down. So they bring me out, and they said, Moonlight Grand played on this field. And they gave me the documentation. Chief Bender, Cy Young, Honest Wagner played on that field. And they said, we're going to rebuild this exactly the way it was in 1906. And as soon as they said Moonlight Graham, I was like, okay, I can do this. They were the ones who had control of this building. But never in my life have I known any politician in any office to be so nice and easy to work with as these guys. These guys from Fulton County, there's 18 board of supervisors, and I have like 18 new best friends. Because they wanted – it's an economically depressed area. They wanted me there. I'm the biggest game in town there with this Hall of Fame. And so as we get going, one of the two guys who built this field had gotten in touch with Stanley Silver from Beverly Hills. Stanley Silver started collecting baseballs with his dad in 1926. And they used to – his dad would take them. He was from Chicago. And they would get autographed balls. So over the years, he sort of got, it's his hobby. He collects autographed baseballs. Most of them he had signed in front of him. Jackie Robinson, Satchel Paige, Stan Musial, Thurman Munson. I mean, on and on. And he's got a Gehrig and a Ruth ball. He bequeathed that collection to us. And we, you know, our lawyers met with his lawyers and, you know, it was very easy. You know, we have to display them 24/7, which we are. And, you know, we'll display them correctly so they're not in direct sunlight, so the signatures won't fade. But Bob Costas is in L.A., and he went out to see the collection. He said, it's fabulous. We sort of asked him, like, well, why didn't Cooperstown theological place? But I don't think they would take the whole collection and display it and not move it. I mean, that collection is going to be there when I'm gone, you know, for sure. So we can't sell anything. We can't give anything away. But this collection, it's online. You can punch in YouTube, Stanley Silver Autograph Baseball Collection. We get the collection upon his passing. So we've got all the paperwork signed, and we have the wall space for it. We ordered the plexiglass to put him behind. So he's 86, I think. And the interesting thing is he's got two sons. We wanted to make sure it was okay with the boys because it would have been their inheritance. But sure. I think he's got another inheritance, you know, a much bigger fortune. So, and I don't think either of the boys really are baseball centric the way we are. So, but we're thrilled about that. Really happy. And we're trying to get Mr. Silver to come to the dinner. You know, he loves the game and very much a gentleman. You know, really loved this guy. For us to get that collection, I think it may be one of the better autographed baseball collections in the country.
Wow.
Big. That's it. You got to go to 45. Well, it's not there yet. I can't.
Well, yeah, the ball collection isn't there yet, but the hall looks pretty good.
The museum is great. So that's at 45 Harrison Street in Gloversville, New York. But when this guy passes on, you will get his collection. So, but we're not.
I just hope I outlive him.
Long life. Yeah. Let's hope he has a long life, though.
Exactly. And,
you know,
exactly.
But
Brian Kenny came for our grand opening. We had 500 people. He was great. That's online on YouTube. And then Bob Costas has done our promotional videos for it. He and I are, we play trivia on cell phones at night. I'll send them like, what famous people were in Joey D and the Starlighters band? Joey D and the Starlighters. Peppermint Twist was their big hit. Peppermint Lounge was on, I think, East 46th Street. And I stumped them. The answer, Joe Pesci and Jimi Hendrix played in Joey D and the Starlighters. Wow. Who knew that? Who knew?
Now we know. We didn't know that before.
And Frankie Valli's brother also played with Joey D and the Starlighters. I love that 60s trivia stuff. I can't stump him on baseball, though. He's unstumpable.
Oh, is he?
Here's the question for tonight. There is a major league player who played in 92 games, did not get an at-bat once. Position player.
Herb Washington? Herb
Washington? Yes. Very good. Wow. That wasn't easy.
Wait, Jeff, you're keeping your reputation.
I guess so. Randy, one other inductee I want to ask you about is our friend. We met him a couple of times, Eric Sherman. He's a great writer. What a writer he is.
Great writer and a really good guy. And, I've become friends with Eric over the years. He came personally to induct Jerry Kuzman because he and Kuz are real good friends. Mm-hmm. He's real close with that team and the 86 Mets and Red Sox teams. And he just came out with the Fernando book on Valenzuela, which is great. I'm reading it now. But Eric is, he is so respectful and appreciative of being inducted. You know, when we talked, I wanted to ask him just to see whether he'd be, he goes, of course, I'd love to be in the Hall of Fame. That's wonderful. Really good guy. I mean, he's a great speaker too. And that's, we pride ourselves on the diversity of who we are, writers, umpires, women, men, Ray Negron, Lorraine Hamilton last year for the Mets. So I'm really, I think like Bernie told me once that was the reason that he thinks we got the formula right. Cause we induct people from all walks of the game. Mm-hmm. It's not just major leaguers. And we also are a big hall organization as opposed to a small hall. I mean, wouldn't it be like one of the guys, Karpinski is getting in this year. Chris Chambliss is boyhood favorite, boyhood hero, idol. Mm-hmm. So how special is that to go in with somebody that you grew up liking,
I'm also looking forward for Dave Valli being inducted because he's from Bayside, New York, which is where I'm from. So it's like hometown kid makes good.
So Ray Negron nominated Dave Valli. He does TV stuff for both Seattle and Texas. His charitable work, his charitable foundation, I forget which island it is. It's an island nation near the Dominican. He donates millions of dollars to this organization. And he's really well thought of in baseball. Both organizations love him. I like him. Real hard guy to get on the phone, though. Uh-huh. You need to talk to him when you see him on that night.
I plan to. I definitely plan to.
Are you guys coming up Friday or Saturday?
Well, Saturday morning.
Saturday morning.
Okay. Yeah, if you get there early, if you want somebody aside, pull them aside and you can set up and interview them.
Fantastic. That'd be great. Yeah, that'd be great.
We appreciate it very much. Yeah. I know that when I see you in action, you're like a force of nature when you're at that dinner. It's a sight to behold.
Todd Zeal was there. I didn't even know he was in the house. I looked down, and there's Todd Zeal, and I'm like, oh, geez.
You were busy.
What's a normal wedding reception? 250, 300?
Right.
Something like that.
Yeah, that's
I've got
big.
450. 480, 490. I mean, and it's hard because I'm trying to bounce everything at the same time. And as long as nobody dies or gets hurt, it's a success. I'm happy,
I tell you, Ronnie, last year when we sat down, we were sitting with Ron Bloomberg at his table.
And that was
just fantastic. And then we had Louis Tiant at the next table. It was just, we were in heaven. It was just the greatest experience.
What was it like sitting at Ronnie's table?
Oh, it was just fantastic. Oh,
he's the friendliest guy.
The stories that come out of his mouth is just great.
Oh, he has no filter. No filter. None. I was like, none. My fingers crossed. Please, no don't filter. Say anything. So at one point, Tommy Agee was being inducted and his widow and daughter were there. And he talked about growing up in the deep South and how the KKK really wasn't friendly to him And I looked at the agents and they were just sort of shaking their head. But I explained to them it was no, you know, there was no malice in his mention of that.
Yeah, no, of course not.
Yeah, absolutely.
He was a tremendous basketball player too. Could have played at UCLA. He was that good.
Yeah,
it was fun. It was fun with Louis Tiant at the next table, and they were kind of jibing each other. You know, they were giving each other heck, and that was, you know, because if people don't know, Louis Tiant is who pitched to Ron Bloomberg when he took his first at bat as the first ever DH. So
he walked him, I think, right?
Yeah,
he did. And
he was like,
RBI.
Swing a bat, you know, what's this? So one of my deep secret underground missions that I try and navigate deep under the waters, I'm trying to get Tiant into Cooperstown. Everything I do at the hall, I ask their permission to be there. Mm-hmm. I ask their permission to do anything. It's just the right thing. We inducted Jane Forbes Clark as the first woman. So I paid a guy who I didn't know, who is a statistical guy, analytics guy. I said, I'm going to give you some money, and in 7 days, you come back to me. You tell me whether Louis Tiant is Hall of Fame, Cooperstown worthy. Week later, he calls me, and he goes, all my analysis seems to clearly indicate that should be in Cooperstown. And I looked at him. I mean, his numbers are better than Drysdale. I mean, there's some other pitchers that he clearly, in the year of the pitcher in 68, I think his ERA was 1.85 through nine shutouts, you know. I mean, and the guy was, he reinvented himself when his arm went bad. Started with Cleveland, did great. When he went to Minnesota, hurt his arm. Then he resurfaces as the ace of the Red Sox.
Right.
So I said, I talked to him quite often on the phone. I said, Louis, you pitched to Munson and Bisk in the same career. Who was better? Because I cannot tell you what they were both. Tremendous, the best two catchers in baseball. He goes, I loved them both. And then he told me that when Thurman passed, he pitched that night against Baltimore. And he said, I pray to God that I win this baseball game more than any other. I wanted to win this game. He got beat 1-0. And then a couple of days later, Mercer had the 5 RBI night and they rallied from the bottom of the ninth. Kenny Singleton was a great guy. He's in our Hall of Fame. He was the last person to walk off the field in that game, the Mercer game. And he told me, he goes, you know, they went to the World Series that year in 79. And he goes, we were not unhappy that the Yankees won that game. Like there was almost a sense of happiness for them. In our locker room, he said, nobody was upset that we lost that game. And Singleton said he had tears in his eyes because when they took the field, everybody in the was crying and upset. They just buried him that day. Pinella and Mercer eulogized him. And he said, there wasn't an era of baseball in the stadium. They're losing 4-0. Mercer brings them back and they win. He goes, the place went crazy. The Yankee Stadium just went nuts rocking, you know. And Mercer, of course, very sentimental. But Singleton, he's a great guy. And he was a great Yankee announcer. I miss him greatly. He was my favorite Yankee announcer.
Rennie, what about Jeff and I were talking about this. You're close enough to the Hall of Fame, you know, within an hour, which is great. Josh Rawich, the president, the current president of the Hall of Fame, to come to the dinner.
He's invited. I met him Cooperstown Hall of Fame weekend, and he is really a great guy. I mean, really great guy. He's the right guy for that job. He's already done well. We inducted Carl Erskine and Gil Hodges in the same year, 2021. Gil Hodges Jr. came. Gary Erskine came. We made a big push for Gil because his name was on the alumni ballot. We had an interesting campaign for him. We needed 12 votes. We got 12. That was the year Jim Catt, Tony Oliva, Minnie Minoso. They inducted four off the senior ballot, never before, never since. But Carl Erskine is still alive. He's the last of the boys of summer. Two no-hitters. Still alive. I talk to him once every 2 or 3 weeks. He's sharp as a tack. You talk baseball. Hey, Carl, how about that home run you hit in Milwaukee? Well, he goes, what pitch? Oh, it was a slider. It got in, and I just hit it. Good, you know. So Erskine's great. There's the biggest Brooklyn Dodger fan in the country is a guy named Jerry Reinsdorf.
Oh, okay.
Reinsdorf owns the White Sox and the Chicago Bulls. Michael Jordan grew up, and he's really serious about the Dodgers. This year, he's on the board of Cooperstown. This year, they voted Carl Erskine the Buck O'Neill Lifetime Achievement Award.
Mm-hmm.
It gets better. Carl really can't travel. So when the statue was made, he and Jane flew to Gary, Indiana, drove to his house, and presented it to him in person.
Oh, wow.
How classy is that?
That's great. That's fantastic.
Oh, my God. And, oh. You know, so next year, we're also going to induct a guy named Joe Black.
Joe Black,
and
okay.
Joe Black was the first African-American to win a World Series game in 1952. He was Rookie of the Year, 115, save 15. His daughter works for Jerry. Works for Jerry personally. So, and I know that we've already told her, you know, is that her dad's going in. He was a wonderful guy. He was an executive at Greyhound Bus Lines. He was a scout for the Diamondbacks. Great career in the game. And I, you know, I love those Brooklyn Dodger guys. Love them.
I just want to let everybody know to check out your website, NYSBHOF.com, New York State Baseball Hall of Fame. It shows you all the inductees and go back past years. They have the videos of the speeches. Just a great, great place to find baseball history and New York State baseball history. But, you know, these just it's just for all-time baseball, obviously.
Thank you so much for that. I really look forward to seeing you guys on November 11th.
We can't wait.
We'll be there. We'll be there. Rennie, thank you so much for joining us for this evening. It was incredible stories. Thank you very much. And like you said, we'll see you on November 11th.
Yeah. We're looking forward to it.
And I love your show, too. I love your show. You guys do great work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. That means a lot coming from you. So that really touches us. Yes. Thank you, Rennie. We appreciate it.
See you soon, guys.
All right. Have a good night.
Hi, this is Gary Mack of the Mets Musings Podcast. And if you like barbecue and you like baseball, then you have to listen to Baseball and BBQ with Jeff and Lynn. They always have the best guests from the world of baseball and the world of barbecue, all in one little package. So check it out. Baseball and BBQ with Lynn and Jeff. Okay, guys, take it away.
And thank you, Rennie. We are excited to go to that dinner next week.
Oh, yeah. You cannot wait. The people that are going to be at that dinner, that are being inducted, that might be there, you know? I mean, it's going to be a who's who.
And I should correct myself, in 2 weeks, I'm so excited I wanted to come already.
Yeah. Looking forward to it. And Rennie's right. You know, it's like making a wedding. What a job he does. Now we know what to expect. Looking forward to it. Hopefully we'll report back to everyone. We'll have maybe some interviews. We'll see. You just never know. But one thing you do know is that if you go to baseballbbq.com, you're going to find some incredible grilling tools and accessories, spatula, fork, tongs, all with baseball bat handles. And what about a cutting board?
And they sell Chef Rube's diamond dust.
Yes, they do.
And sauce.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was saying the cutting board shaped like home plate. Now that's pretty cool.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I happen to have one myself and I really love it.
The only thing is you got to tell your butcher that when he gives you your brisket, he's got to shape it like home plate so it fits.
And the joke's getting old. Okay.
But so am I.
If you want to reach the show, Len, what's the phone number?
Oh, I don't know. You know,
it's 516-855-8214. Give us a call. Leave a message. Our email is baseball@bbq@gmail.com. Please send us an email. Leave us a comment on our Facebook page, Baseball and BBQ. Give us a comment on X or Twitter at Baseball and BBQ. Instagram, Baseball and Barbecue, where barbecue is all spelled out. We have a website, www.baseballandbbq.weebly.com. And Len, what do we want people to do?
We want you to rate us. We want you to subscribe to us. We want you to tell your friends. Anything else?
Review us.
review us. 5 stars, of course, would be nice. And absolutely, in exchange for that, Jeff, you have something for our audience.
It's time for the baseball quote of the week.
Baseball, it is said, is only a game. True. And the Grand Canyon is only a hole in Arizona. Not all holes or games are created equal. That's political commentator George Will.
Very nice. Thank you for that, Jeff. So, Jeff, what I love about this is that we're only halfway through the show.
We are.
Yeah, because we still have James Hare from a Cucamonga Cattle Company.
Say that again.
Cucamonga. Cucamonga. And if everybody goes to Cuca, that's CucaCattleco.com, and listen to this, then go to that website, you're going to be very happy and very hungry. So give it a listen. Here's James Hare.
The Cucamonga Cattle Company are the makers of rubs and sauces, which started out as just barbecuing for friends and family. Our guest was not satisfied with commercial spices and rubs on the market, so he did what he needed to do and made his own. James Hare is the proprietor of Cucamonga Cattle Company, located in Rancho Cucamonga, which is outside of Los Angeles. James is also a barbecue competition team. In their first event, they took home grand champion. How about that? Welcome to Baseball and BBQ, James.
Welcome, James.
Thanks for having me.
I think you just have the name Cucamonga so you can make everybody sound. They can't say it. Cucamonga. It's fun, though.
I grew up in Cucamonga. So I watching Bugs Bunny and the Abbott and Costello always had something with Cucamonga. Yeah. And to me, it was always, okay, that's odd.
James, we've got to do the, you know, what all barbecue podcasts must do. We must find out your origin story. So tell us, how did you get your start in barbecue?
When I was younger, my dad and family liked to do horse rides, like over the weekend. And my butt didn't like to do it. So I ended up riding with the truck to go to the next stop and helping set up. And that means you cook. And so I started learning at the tender young age of about 10. I was tending the pits by myself and,
wow,
and cooking. And my dad was a cook. So I'd already learned to cook a little bit, but it just sort of grew from that. You fast forward about 20 years, 30 years. Yeah, 30 years, and lose your job. And your wife says, do the barbecue stuff. And so that's what I did. I started Cucamonga Cattle Company, named after, there's a movie called Culpeper Cattle Company. My dad used to watch Westerns exclusively. And I remember when it was 5 or 6, Culpeper Cattle Company comes out. And I thought, Cucamonga Cattle Company, that sounds cool. And it stuck with me. My wife said, what are you going to name the company? That was it.
Sounds pretty cool.
We started with one rub. I called it Trail Boss to begin with. Then I got a partner, and he wanted to change it to, what's that dare? Like Worcestershire.
Okay.
I went with that for a couple of years. And I just telling you, what's that dare barbecue rub by Cucamonga Cattle Company is just such a mouthful. So we changed it back. My partner quit. I changed it back to Trail Boss and never looked back.
Let's go to the rubs. So on your webpage, it's a CucaCattleco.com. So CucaCattleco.com. The rubs, I love how when you put the pointer over the rubs, it gives you that close-up view.
Yeah,
it looks like you. Yeah. And these rubs look like they've got some good stuff in them. So tell us how you are distinguishing yourself. I could see already, actually, how you're doing it from other rubs, because you could tell us the rub business is tough.
Goodness, everybody and their brother has a rub. What makes yours stand out? Mine, I value the fact that whenever I sell mine mostly at like farmers markets and things like that. I have a few stores now that sell it. The thing that I like is being able to have people smell it and taste it. You can't do that in the store. But 90% of the stuff that's out there, if you were to smell it in the store, it smells like feet.
Like feet. Oh, you know, there's a percentage of people that anyway, we won't go.
We don't need to go there. But yeah, salt and paprika are cheap. The stuff that's in mine is not. It's a premium brand. The stuff that's in there is, I mean, it's ground fresh. It's put together for me that day and shipped out. It's like basically, you know, boom, 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 it's done. I buy in small batches. I buy in 50-pound batches. So my stuff's gone in a couple of weeks. I order again. So I have a 2-week thing, a rollover that I have with my supplier. And they're made for me in St. Louis. I live out here in California where I can't afford to get them made. But they enhance the flavors of what you're putting it on. So it's one of the things that I strive to do when I started making these is I don't want to cover up that $150 piece of meat that I just bought. You want to be able to taste the tri-tip. You want to be able to taste the brisket. You want to be able to taste the chicken. And these are nice because they do just that. They just enhance the flavor of what you throw them on. My Trail Boss, the original one, I actually started out for tri-tip. Because out here in California, tri-tip is king. Santa Maria is salt, pepper, and garlic. You know, it's brisket. And I got tired of it, really. And so I came up with the barbecue flavor of Trail Boss. And it's definitely a barbecue. I mean, when you think barbecue, that's the smell you get when you smell it and taste it. And I do a reverse sear on a tri-tip where I put it on for about 45 minutes on the smoker, get a good dose of smoke on it. And then I pull it off and get it on a hottest fire as I can find, you know, 500-600 degrees, whatever I've got laying around. I got several cookers, so I can usually find something. You put it down that hot fire for 3 minutes, rotate it again, get some good grill marks on it, flip it over 3 minutes, rotate it 3 minutes, pull it off, let it sit for half an hour. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. I get goosebumps every time I talk about it. It's so good.
I'm getting goosebumps right now just hearing about it.
You should see it. I work in pictures whenever I do this for people. I have to show them pictures of what I'm doing. You know, they look at it and they go, oh yeah, that looks good. But I get a lot of good feedback. It's fun. Yeah. I enjoy the heck out of it.
Your Prairie Dust, is it specifically for poultry?
It started out that way. It's really good on. It's really good for poultry. My wife's. I had the Trail Boss for 4 years before I had any other rubs. My wife said you need a chicken rub, so we came up with that one. Really good on chicken. I tried it. I when I'm doing my testing, I try it on different meats and different cuts and whatever. Really good on rib tips. If you're doing the ribs and you've got those barbecue ribs, they're great. But you got the rib tips. Put that on there, and it's a polar opposite of what the ribs are, and they are so good. They just have a really great flavor. So there it goes on pork, really good on vegetables. We use it. I mean, I cook with this stuff every day. In my macaroni and cheese, I use the Prairie Dust. I put it in the pasta water when I boil the pasta. I make the cheese sauce, it goes in that. And then the cheese that I sprinkle on top, I put a little bit in. It's just a lovely process.
Yes. So James, you mentioned it goes well on chicken. We get a lot of rub companies that come on, and some have very, you know, something that really goes with pork and something that really goes with chicken. Are there particular spices that you just know pair well with chicken? You use those in the rub?
Yeah. You know, you've got your, what Meathead likes to call his Simon and Garfunkel, rosemary, thyme, sage.
Right.
Those things, those always work well. All your herbs work really well with chicken. You want to stay away from anything that's real pungent. I have a thing for ground celery seed. A lot of people use ground celery seed. They use celery seed. But the ground celery seed has this real piney almost flavor to it and smell. And it just adds something that people are like, what is that? You get people, in when you're in the rub business, you get people always trying to tell you what's in your rub. They'll right. smell it or they'll taste it. Oh, is that cayenne? And I'm like, no, there's no cayenne. Oh, really? I sure taste cayenne. I'm like, well, you don't. And then they'll say, oh, what kind of chili powder do you use? And I said, well, actually, I'm averse to chili powder too. I don't like chili powder. Everybody has chili powder. I wanted something right. different. So I don't use chili powder. And every day that I'm selling, people will be like, oh, I smell chili powder. I'm like, no. And so you learn over time that certain flavors just don't work with, say, beef. Like for my Trail Boss, there's a lot of sugar in it. And normally I wouldn't put that on beef. It's just beef and sugar. You know, you don't want that on right. steak. It doesn't taste right. But Dad burned it on a tri-tip. It works so well. There you go. just got to figure that out. But yeah, the cool thing is if you look at my double barrel, it's actually, whenever I'm making chicken for my wife, I'm using the Prairie Dust, but I like the sweet on the chicken, so I'm using Trail Boss. And actually, I was using about equal parts. So I dumped two bottles together, Prairie Dust and Double Barrel Trail Boss, and it became Double Barrel. But yeah, it's my go-to for pork. It's got the sweet, it's got the savory. It just merged together really, really well. And it doesn't taste like either of the other two. So it worked out really, really well.
Now, James, on your website, it says rubs and sauces. Am I missing? I see rubs.
I don't have any sauces out yet.
Okay.
When the pandemic started was when I was, things went from being $500 a deal to being $1,000 to being $1,500 just to get them out of my head onto the shelf. Mm-hmm. And it's at this point, it got to the point where I was in, when the pandemic started, I was in almost, I was in 15 stores and we were spreading out to other states and things were looking really, really good. Pandemic hit, everything, stores stopped selling, people stopped buying. So my income went from mediocre to about nothing. Mm-hmm. And so we had to put the kibosh on that. But I do make sauce at home for when I'm selling a cottage kitchen deal, so I can make it at home and then sell it.
Gotcha.
I can't do it on the, I can't sell that on the website.
You know what I love about the your presentation of bottles is the Western theme. I mean, it looks like, you know, with the cattle, the longhorns and the rustic picture there. Did you come up with that, or is that you had to go out
and that? Everything to do with this company comes out of my brain. I do all the artwork. I do all of the layout for the labels. I do all of the any advertising, anything. I have to do it because I just at one point I couldn't afford to get it done. So it was either me or the highway. Right. So doing the naming, the names are hard to come up with because you don't want something that somebody else has. Prairie Dust was a fluke because everybody and their mother has a Prairie Dust, but it was just like, no, that's Prairie Dust. That's what it is. You ever see Dances with Wolves? And he's out there, and he's got his hands on the grass and he's just talking through there. And I told my wife, I said, I bet that smells beautiful after a rain, if you can get past the buffalo turds and all that. But the aromatics of that must be wonderful. That's where I started with Prairie Dust. And that's how I come up with the flavors that were in that.
Your most recent one, is that Range Rider? Is that
Range Rider? Yeah.
I've heard good things about that.
People were bugging me for years to come up with a beef rub. And I kept trying, and I wasn't happy with what I was coming up with. And finally, buddy and I sat down and said, we got to get this done. And we started messing around with a few things. And after about 6 weeks of him and I batting things back and forth, we came up with this one. And it has been really, really good. I've been really pleased with it. Right now, it's outselling the others 2-1.
Really?
People are just, because it's so good on brisket, it's really good on steaks, it's really good on burgers. I made the mistake of trying it on some pork ribs, just a rack of ribs, just test cooked, and it was fabulous. It was like, I'm a master KCBS judge, and so I've tasted a lot of ribs and a lot of pork and a lot of chicken, and whenever I get those ribs in competition, they're these candied ribs.
Oh, yeah.
If you ever talk to a judge, they say the sweet wins. That's what the judge is like. Well, sweet wins because we have 6 sweet ribs. That's why sweet wins. And so, but this rib with the beef rub on it was like the best pork chop I've ever had. So, and things like that. So
I was going to talk to you about that. That was the next thing I was going to bring up, is that you are a KCBS judge. And I happened to hear you on doing another interview. And you talked about judging the one bite. And also you mentioned that you are a great chicken breast maker.
Yeah. I am.
And I would love to know your secret, because I went to thighs. I'm not a competition cook, but I went to thighs because they are the juiciest. They're forgiving. You know, I can overcook a thigh. You can't overcook a thigh.
No, it's well, that's the nice thing. If you do overcook a thigh, it's still got enough stuff in there to make it functional.
Right.
But yeah. The breast, really hard. My secret is I always pull them early, because the carryover cooking on those is a long carryover. So if you pull them early when they're about 255, 260, right in there.
And wait, then a chicken breast?
Uh-huh.
And you said what?
165, I'm sorry.
Okay. Jeff, I didn't want to, like, you know, tell the guest, I don't think so. But I'm thinking, James?
No, I do that every once in a while. I get ahead of myself, and my face doesn't work quite as fast as my brain. But no, 165, if you pull it up at 155 and let it sit for half an hour or so while you're finishing up everything else, it will carry over cook to between 160, 165. And that's been my secret, is that when you go to cut into it, then it's nice and juicy. Anymore, I've cooked so much, I can tell by touch when they're done, when they're at that point. Because, you know, when you handle things so much, you understand how the feeling goes with them. But yeah, I make a thing called that I call Hawaiian chicken. It's just barbecued chicken breast on rice with pineapple and green onions and sriracha. But you cook those, you slice that up, and you toss that with some barbecue sauce. And if you've got a dry chicken, it doesn't work. It just, ugh. But with that formula, it is so good.
You know, before we started recording, you talked to me about you used to be a competition cook, and you mm-hmm. became a grand champion your first competition. So talk to us about your competition career.
Competition career. Well, we started out, like I said, I had a partner, and we were invited to do this competition, and was like, okay, well, let's see what we do. And it actually included tri-tip. That's why one of the reasons they called us out there. We were getting a reputation for our tri-tip. And so we went out and did the competition with the ribs and chicken and tri-tip. What else? And sausage. And we had mix, and we made sauce. We did all kinds of things. We just sort of went at it from a, let's just go have fun because we know we're going to screw it up anyway. So we did our thing. We got called for first place in chicken. Then we got a second place call for sausage. And then we got a first place call in tri-tip and a second place call in sauce. And it was just a wow. Okay. And when all was said and done, we were grand champions, and it was something that we had not planned on. And it's just gone to, it was just a fluke for us. That's what we thought. And it turned out it probably was, because when we went to our first competition was at Knott's Berry Farm and out here in Anaheim. We got there, it was on New Year's Day. Did our thing, and we came in right in the middle. I think we were 24th out of 50 teams, but we got everything turned in. Nobody died. It was a good day. So
nobody died. That always makes a good day.
Doesn't make a good day. But yeah, we went on from there. We did a few more competitions, and we would come in right in the middle. And I never really do. You get guys who prepare for competitions, you know, they do test cooks and they do this and they do that. I really don't work that way. Because the day is what the day is. I know how to cook. So it's like, I know what I'm going to do. So I just show up and I start cooking. And with that, I'm an average cook. So it really doesn't bother me that I don't come in first place, or that we, you know, aren't getting all these trophies. They got no place to put them anyway. And it shows to go us that we do cook well. People enjoy our food. That's what I strive for. The championship, that's great when you can win. I really like to win with my rubs, but you know, when I'm cooking, the satisfaction I get, I cook for my family, I cook for my friends, and you know, everybody likes it. Everybody has a good time, and I think that's most important. That being said, I'm probably not a very good competitor, but I have fun.
Well, that's the main thing.
Yeah. And that's all right, because I think my feeling is we get more backyard cooks on this show than, and maybe people that think about competing one day, than actual competition cooks, because you know, there's shows for that specifically cater to competition. You know,
there are people who that's what they do, and they do really well at it. For us backyard cooks, 90% of the people I talk to are backyard people.
Right.
The people who buy my rubs are back. I make this stuff for people who cook. I don't sponsor any teams. I know, being a judge, I've talked to every team that's out there, just about, at least in my area. And they've all gotten samples like, hey, I make this here. Try it. See if you like it. And most people do, but I hardly ever get feedback from teams, hardly ever. And but people who buy it, I mean, I'd say 50% of my clientele are return customers. You know, I enjoy teaching people how to cook. I have, you know, 18 different cookers in my backyard. And every once in a while, I break out a video and we'll show people how to cook a tri-tip on one thing or on the other thing or on the next thing. And
how many cookers?
19 right now.
Oh, okay. I thought you had you were going to say a large number. Yeah, no, 19, come on.
19, you know, I know people that have, you know, 20, 30, and that but I think they count things twice, like my 18-inch Weber and my 22-inch Weber. Those are the same thing. It's just one's bigger than the other, right? But yeah, I'm lucky because I've run into a few people. Pit Barrel sent me a small Pit Barrel. Orion, which they sent me a cooker, which is like cooking on an upside down trash can. So, you know, I've been very fortunate. A knife company has sent me a whole bunch of knives that I use religiously. They're so nice as not having, you know, access to a lot of really nice knives. These were perfect. Mm-hmm. It just really, really good stuff. So,
is there a particular cooker out of your 18, 19 that you have that you use most or you enjoy using the most?
You know, this is hilarious. I talk to people, like I said, every day about cooking, and people walk up and they go, "Oh, I just have a Traeger," and how people are kind of ashamed that they have a pellet cooker. I'm like, "Great, I have a Traeger that I've had for 12 years, and it's the workhorse of what I do." Because I don't always have time to sit out there and babysit a fire. Traeger works great. I have a Green Mountain. I have a Traeger. I have a Big Green Egg. I have a gas grill. I have the two Webers. I have the Weber kettle. I have a Santa Maria. I have the Orion. I have the Pit Barrel. It just keeps going and going. So proficient at, I would say, you know, 10% of them. We can get out there and try them on different things. Last year we did a spatchcock turkey on the Santa Maria, which is that up and down flat top kind of thing. And that was a challenge because I didn't have anything big enough to spatchcock a turkey on other than that surface. We went with it, and I'll be darned if you take the lid off of the Weber kettle, put it over the turkey, there you have an induction oven.
There you go.
Oh, great. It was a beautiful bird. Tasted great. It was one of those heritage breeds, so get them, and it's amazing. It's like at Thanksgiving I do three turkeys for, you know, the family of five that I have, because I can't make up my mind. Let's have this one. But,
yeah. And James, do you cook with your son? Yeah, tell us.
He's a master judge as well. Mm-hmm. He started as a judge when he would come with me when he was about 13. Can't be a judge until you're 16. But by the time he was 16, he'd already been to 20 competitions. You need 30 to be a master. But, you know, he started when he was 16. By the time he was 20, he was a master. It's funny to see. He's the young gun in the tent, I tell you. Got a lot of old farts like me out in there. And he's the new blood. You know, people ask him all the time, "What do you think?" Because he's had the experience. And, you know, he's in of himself, he's done probably, I don't know, 45, 50 competitions. I've done almost 100. Yeah. And, you know, you get 6-7 portions each time. You've eaten, you know, a couple of ribs. You've eaten a few pieces of chicken. And he's gung ho. He likes the people. He loves. I go to the National Barbecue Association conference every year. Was on the board a couple of years ago. And was able to introduce Jake to a lot of people and be part of that. It was very, very cool. Got real close with Kel Phelps from
right.
Who? Human. Never heard of him.
You don't know who Kale is?
We love Kel. We love Kel. He is
such a backup. He's gonna listen and be like,
"Yeah, exactly.
You forgot me already?"
Yeah, he's a crack up. But yeah, I've been very, very fortunate. I mean, I've met everybody who's anybody in barbecue just about. Now I've met you guys, really? So you guys are top of my list.
Thank you. Drop the mic.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's just, I enjoy teaching people about this. I have a passion for cooking, and barbecue just happens to be my forte. I don't know about that, but I enjoy that more than anything. I make a killer beef stroganoff. Yeah. So it's just all, it's all there. If you, whatever you want to do, let's do it. You know, with all the different cookers I have, with the, you know, my dad had a restaurant when I was a kid, so I learned a lot there. I learned that I don't want to have a restaurant. I did some catering for a few years, learned that I don't want to be a caterer. Cause people ask me this all the time and I'm like, no, I like the barbecue rub thing because once I get to it again, where when the stores need rubs, I make a phone call. The phone call or the rub will be drop shipped to them. I don't have to touch it. It goes from me to that's how it works. That's how I love it. I can get out there and I can support it. I can, you know, get people to buy it. But, you know, the whole thing is I don't want to have to work.
You mentioned, you know, a lot of people in barbecue, and looking at your website, the Wall of Fame, I mean, you certainly do. I mean,
Wall of Flame.
Impressive list of people that you've met in barbecue. Yeah. It's really impressive.
It's a who's who.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and a what's what.
It's like one of the first people I actually met when I went to the National Barbecue Association. This is when I very first started, and this was when it was the first year I went to the National Barbecue Association. They had it in San Diego here. Yeah. I met Mike Mills, and he became a lifelong, he's been my friend, or was my friend for 10 years. God rest him. He's one of the best people I've ever met. I have both of his cookbooks signed by him, my prized possessions. Him and Amy are just, you know, great people. But Mike, we were in San Marcos, Texas. And I every morning I would get up at the hotel and go get a cup of coffee. And Mike was there with me. He's like, they have crappy coffee here. Let's go and get coffee. So him and I would spend the first 2 hours every morning just sitting there talking and all this stuff. And he was getting ready to do a podcast. And he goes, what's your opinion of California barbecue? And for Mike Mills to ask me a question like that, I was just flabbergasted. I have you. Why do you ask me? No. So that was a high point of my life right there. And it's funny. I used to be a recording engineer for movies and TV. If you watch Dumb and Dumber, you can actually see my name go by. It's one of the few that actually
played. Really?
Yeah, I was an ADR recordist. So I got to work with actors and directors all day. It was cool. It was one of those bucket list things. Now I don't have to do it. But I met directors and actors all day long. And I'm not a starstruck person. I tell people this story all the time. When I meet Mike Mills, I'm like a 13-year-old girl. Every time I meet him, I'm like, Mike, hi, how are you? It's kind of sad. But he just does that to me. I've watched him over the years and listened to him. And, you know, the sage of barbecue, just about. Just what he tells you is amazing.
That's a regret. We've had Amy on, we've met her, and but unfortunately we were slow and we did not have Mike Mills, because everything you hear about him is just, he was a prince. Oh. And we just had, who did we, Jeff, we just had somebody on talking about Mike Mills, was
Brett Lunsford.
Was it Brett?
Brett Lunsford, yes.
Okay. You know, you hear just, he just was, he'd offer his advice to anyone. I mean, and just, yeah. Anyway.
And it was always good advice. It was never, you know, I don't know. Don't ask me. It was always, he always had an answer for something. Yeah. That was, like I said, it was a shame. My son didn't get to meet him. And that was a big regret. And that stupid pandemic thing screwed up so many things. So anyway, on a lighter note.
I see you're with Denny Mike. Former
guest. Like Andy Mike.
he was on
when I first started too.
Yeah. He's got a great rub company as well.
Yeah. Denny Mike introduced us to Artie Davis.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes. Artie Davis has got to be one of, you know, talk about Mike Mills. Artie Davis and is just what a beautiful human being.
He's one of those guys that it's on my list. I've been in the room with him, but I haven't gotten to meet him yet.
You have to. You must. Quick story about, I mean, we went to Kansas City to celebrate our 200th episode. Artie had been on the show, like Jeff said, the one time. We got in touch with him. He said, absolutely. We met him in person. And since then, it was love at first sight.
Yeah, he seems like just a really sweet person.
Yeah, really. really is.
That's one of the nicest things, though, about barbecue. Yeah. Is it's really hard to run into a butthead.
Exactly.
I've had several careers, you know, with between computers, technology, and Hollywood, and barbecue. I'll take barbecue any day. The nicest people, you get what you get. It's like with me. I stopped trying to impress people. I stopped trying to be something I'm not. What you see is what you get. I'm very honest. I'm very straightforward. If I can help, I will. If I can't, I'll say no. And that's like, I don't regret not being able to help. I mean, I regret not being able to help, but I don't regret being able to say no, because I don't want to drag you in. Get dragged into something that's not going to help. And so it's nice.
Jeffy has pictures on here. He was with Tuffy. He was with Aaron Franklin. He was with Tuffy. I saw a picture with Tuffy.
Yeah, I cooked against Tuffy and Myron and Junior all at once. They were cooking across from us, and I was cooking with Deuce Raymond. Dave Raymond's
cute. And we just spoke to Dave Raymond just the other day.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You like his hair? You feel the long hair now?
Yeah.
Oh, Dave Raymond was talking about Mike Mills. I think he said something about, yes, maybe he also. So now let's go back to your Walls of Flame. Because I'm looking at this, unbelievable. You were with Stephen Reichlin. You did Barbecue University. Tell us about.
Did not. He came to the National Barbecue Association.
Oh, okay. I thought you went and did his cooking class.
I have never taken a cooking class.
Ah, okay.
I live, you know, 20 minutes from Harry Sue, and I've never even contemplated it. Harry and I have cooked together, and it's never come up. It's just been one of those things.
Yeah, he has a right heat because he has his cooking class. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of these were taken. So the NBBQA is
NBBQA
is the place to be.
Business of barbecue.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where I meet most of these people. Steve at Franklin Barbecue. We actually got to go there after they closed. And we got there with our two busloads of people, and we get out and we got a full tour, and he cut us up some brisket, and he cut us up some ribs, and gave us the whole deal. And he's right there. It was so nice to be able to have that interaction without being interrupted by, you know, some schmo from Kentucky who wants a picture. And, you know, yeah, that's great and all, but this is my time.
Some of my best friends are schmoes from Kentucky, so just
there you go. I'm a schmo from California.
We're New York schmoes.
There you go.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. I just sometimes I put my foot in my mouth and I don't even know it.
Oh, what's that expression? If something about I put my feet in my mouth so much I have athlete's tongue.
Athlete's tongue.
All right. So James.
Short track.
Tell us about when you met Chad Ward.
Thank you. That's what I was going to ask.
Okay.
Chad was at the National Barbecue Association. They were there with Traeger. He's a big Traeger rep. So he and Danielle DBQ were there cooking, and I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off. I was in charge of keeping everybody moving, so I'm running around making sure that they have what they need and that people are doing what they're supposed to do. But yeah, just being able to sit down and spend 10 minutes with these guys. I met him about 4 years earlier in California. Here we did a bull barbecue burger challenge, and so we cooked hamburgers for the competition, and he was one of the judges. And so I got to meet him then, and we talked about the burger that we made that was pretty darn good. I think we came in third. It's not bad, but it's nice because the people that I get to meet are in their element. So they're not, you know, like running into people at the airport, you know, it's not the same thing. But when they're in their element, people want to talk to you and they want to, you know, impart. So it works out really, really well.
James, what are the keys? You just said it. It became my next question. We have a lot of backyard cooks who are, you know, they'll make burgers. Mm-hmm. What are the keys to a great burger? You said you make great burgers.
80-20 beef, whether you grind your own from scraps or you buy it at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Don't buy a chub, that stuff that's in a plastic tube. Don't buy that. can't see it. You wouldn't buy a steak that way. If you know, if they wrap steaks where you couldn't see them, you wouldn't buy them because you can't see the marbling. And if you can see this, the meat, you can tell that it's fresh. So you get that, you get the 60-20 beef. And then I make my own patties. I have a burger press, so they're nice and round. I like that. You eat with your eyes first. Presentation is everything. You make them nice and round. You flatten them out. And then I douse them really good with Worcestershire, both sides. And I mean douse them, not just sprinkle it on.
Okay, Worcestershire. Okay.
Glorious coating of whichever rub I just have at hand, which is probably going to be Prairie Dust or Range Rider. I like those really well on a burger.
So you are putting, you're putting a rub
on both sides.
Okay. You put the rub on.
Flap that down. Make sure your friends and family are standing around when that hits the grill, because the smell that comes off of there is just glorious. It makes everything worthwhile, because then when they go to eat the burger, they remember that smell and it tastes so good. It's just that whole process. I'm my mouth is watering right now. It's like, I love that process.
Mine too.
I did that at Christmas. I did that exact thing at Christmas because I hadn't cooked with the Trail Boss for a while. And so I was making some burgers and I did that. The stuff hit the grill. I did the, and then when I took that first bite, that smell memory came back. The flavors were there. It just made for a happy time. It was just, leave me alone for a minute. And that's what I enjoy about the cooking, is that I'm watching people enjoy what I've done. And
that's the best part. Yes.
Yeah, it really is. That's why, I mean, I go way overboard at Christmas and Thanksgiving, because we do a prime rib at Christmas and turkeys at Thanksgiving. And I pride myself on my sides. If I try something different, it's usually a side that is something I haven't done for a while. It usually ends up in rotation. So yeah, it's like Prairie Dust is my Thanksgiving in a bottle, because it goes on my turkey, it goes on my stuffing, it goes on my vegetables. But it's just, I mean, I can talk about this stuff for days. I mean, I'm so passionate about it, cooking and making sure that people are getting the flavors they need, because it's important now. World has changed, you know. I don't want to get philosophical, but having food with your family is important. Having good food with your family is important. And, you know, we have In-N-Out out here, so I can go grab a burger. It's 5 minutes from my house. That's great. But if I can get out on the grill and take that extra 45 minutes to make a decent burger at home, it's night and day. Yeah. Night and day.
And speaking about recipes and cooking, you have a page on your website dedicated to recipes where people can just print out. And it's about, what, a dozen recipes, a little more here on this this page here. So it's terrific to just click and download the instructions. So check that out. James, before we let you go, please let us know about your social media. I know you have obviously a website at www.cucacattleco.com, but you also have other social media that people can reach out to you.
We have cucacattleco.com, and then we have what else do we have? We have Instagram at cucacattleco. We have Facebook, cucacattleco.com, or cucacattleco, maybe Cucamonga Cattle Company. I don't know that stuff. I have people for that. But yeah, if you do Cucamonga Cattle Company, that all comes up. We do the videos on Instagram. We try to show people how to cook different things. All my recipes are my recipes. So I go through them and make sure they're all kid-proof. My kids can make every one of those recipes. My banana pudding recipe, I want to tout that. If you like banana pudding and you don't like making banana pudding, because it can be, there's only like three recipes for banana pudding. There's the cooking one, the Magnolia Bakery one, and the one on the box. This one, I've narrowed it down. If you try the recipe, it's so much easier. It's pudding, it's whipped cream and milk and bananas and, you know, that whole thing. Five ingredients. And it takes 20 minutes. And it's so good. Anyway.
Nancy's Nanner Pudding. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, she's the one she always made it. And I always sliced the bananas. And then she died before I got the recipe from her. And so I sort of had to experiment for a few years to get it down, but man, it's good. I enjoy the heck of it. It's one of my favorite things in the world, and I can make that in 20 minutes, and it's like, oh,
it does look good. And it's not, it doesn't look complicated.
It's not. It's, you know? I've like I said, I dummy proof most of this stuff because there's me. It's just, like I said, I enjoy people having a good time with the food. And like I tell people, next to the picture of the recipe on the main page, I put what rub I use with the recipe. So you don't have to dig through to see what my rub goes with. You know, I bought this one, what can I use it with? And then I tell people, you know, you can use salt and pepper. You don't have to use my rubs, but boy, are they good with the rubs.
Yeah.
and there's no rub in the Nancy's Nanner pudding.
No, there is no rub in that. That's a no free rub. No tie-in recipe. I had such a good recipe, I had to share it.
Yeah. All of a sudden I have a craving for banana pudding. And I'm going to make
tell
this.
Me how bad it is.
I'm going to make this.
You let me know.
James, really thank you for your time. I mean, this just looks terrific. Everybody go to cookacattleco.com, order some rubs. James, we wish you all the best. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate
thank you. Thank you, James. We really enjoyed that talk and suggest everybody go to the website. Let me let everybody know that we are presented by Bet Online. It is, or as I say, it is where the game starts. But we're not starting, we are ending. So as we end, let's take a moment to thank our guests, Rennie LaRue, James Hare, and all our listeners. We thank all of you. We hope you've enjoyed episode 209. Looking forward to everybody coming back for 210. Jeff, how do we end the show?
With the poet.
Shel Krakowski.
The musician.
Dave Dresser.
And the song.
Baseball always brings you home.
And we'll see you next week on episode number 210.
Best of